You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Jane Lee, our athletics reporter for MLB.com. Jane, before we talk any baseball, we have to talk Thanksgiving. Of course, I know you're a huge foodie, so I need to know what you ate, what was the best part, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was great. I did eat a lot. I had two meals the day of Thanksgiving, like two
yes.
full meals. So I went over to some family members' house and ate a bunch there. But while I was there, my dad stays home and makes like his own huge meal for our family as well. So ate one meal. Came home, let it digest a little bit, and then, like, ate another whole Thanksgiving meal. And that's always my favorite because makes this big ham and really good potatoes and all the fixings and everything. So nothing abnormal, everything, I feel like all the typical stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do eat a lot. As everyone should on that day.
You're supposed to. That sounds amazing. I fear that I actually didn't eat enough. So
what happened?
I'm going to have to make up for it, yeah, in the next couple of holidays for sure. I saved some extra room, I guess.
I went for it. I did the
cookie pot
with my mom and my sister in the morning. So I was like, you know what? Just going for it.
I love it. And that's a great idea. More people should do that. Jane, the last time we talked, a lot of things have happened. So we're going to rewind about 10 or so days ago and catch up. The Athletics are making moves. They're in the game right now. And I wanted to break down a few names and kind of just give people a perspective of what exactly the Rule 5 draft is. So two names, Heath Fehlmeyer and Lou Trevino, the A's added them to their 40-man to protect them from the Rule 5 draft. Why do A's fans need to care about something like this?
Well, so basically, without getting too complicated, when the Rule 5 draft happens, every winner, players that are eligible for the Rule 5 draft can basically be selected by any other team. And if they are selected, an A's player, an A's minor league player was selected, the A's would lose him to another team. And that other team has to keep that player on their active roster for the entirety of the season or else has to give them back to the A's. So, last week when rosters had to be set, it's an important day just because you do have to decide, which players do you want to protect and keep on your 40-man roster to prevent from maybe losing them in that Rule 5 draft. And a lot of guys are taken in that draft. I mean, that's how the A's got Mark Canha a couple years ago. And so it's a pretty important day. And going into it, the A's 40-man roster was full.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of wondering, are they going to leave it as is? Or are they going to make some moves to try to protect some guys? And this year, compared to last year, there weren't really any must-have prospects they needed to protect. Last year there were several guys like Franklin Barreto, Paul Blackburn, who ended up being a big part of the rotation this year, Jacob Brugman. There were five total last year. This year they protected two, Heath Fehlmeyer and Lou Trevino, and for good reason. I think the A's are always looking to make sure that their pitching depth is intact and strong. And with Heath Fehlmeyer, he's been a guy that's kind of been under the radar ever since he's been in the A system, but a guy that they, clearly admire and respect and think that, pretty soon he could be part of that starting pitching mix. He'll certainly be in AAA at least to start the year and, just give them more depth. And then Lou Trevino, a guy that probably many people haven't heard of, but you look at him and his repertoire, his resume. I mean, any reliever right now that can touch 100 miles an hour. I mean, this guy. you want to keep those guys. And you look at just the needs within the organization. Bullpen's obviously an area of, you know, just kind of lacking right now, an area they want to upgrade. And although Trevino's not considered especially close to being big league ready, you know, it doesn't hurt to just have those guys stocked in the system and keep grooming them. So, you know, I think there were a lot of guys that were eligible. And so besides those two, a lot of guys will be now able eligible for the Rule 5 draft. But I think this is kind of all to be expected of the A's. I think there were, you know, even some whisperings, you know, are they going to be able to protect anyone at all? So the fact that they were able to do so without really affecting their 40-man roster was a good thing.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how big of a deal this actually is. It kind of just sneaks up on you, and then all of a sudden it makes a lot more sense why teams are doing what they're doing. Jane, you wrote about Jake Smolinski, and I think that A's fans probably put him on the back burner as he was out most of 2017. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, for sure. And a guy that was maybe even on the back burner in 2016, you know, just kind of that bench role, you know, just not a guy that's always been front and center, but a guy that I know that A's fans really do love. I know that A's fans, there's something about his smile. I think he does have perhaps the widest smile all of baseball. So I know that fans love him for that. I think Smiling Jake is what a lot of fans like to call him. So even though, you know, he's been a little under the radar, I think a guy that fans have always gravitated to and a guy that fans really root for.
Yeah.
And I know that was obviously unfortunate for him last spring training. I mean, going in, he was the favorite to land the fifth outfielder job. You know, it just seemed like it was going to be a no-brainer. And then he has to have right shoulder surgery. And, you know, early on in the process, I think everyone thought, oh, he's probably out for the year. You know, it just takes a lot of time. But I know he worked really hard in his rehab. And, you know, instead of just kind of riding it out through the end of the season, I mean, he fought his way back and was able to play in some games in September. And the fact that he's still in the A's organization and that they tendered him a contract this week, I think it is significant. I would have probably pegged him as the one non-tender candidate of all their arbitration eligible players this year, just because they do have a good abundance of outfield depth right now. But this is a guy that, you know, they've just always been high on him since getting him. So I know that they're anxious to kind of see what he's capable of with an extended opportunity. They really like his bat against left-handed pitching. So he could turn out to be a pretty good complement in that outfield.
Yeah, and you wrote about the need for a corner outfield bat. So I'm wondering, is this job Smolinski's to lose?
I wouldn't say that, just because I think he's more of a role player. He's gonna, you know, be more of a platoon guy off the bench. Whereas you know, the type of guy that they're targeting, they really want that everyday outfielder, I think, with a strong bat. I mean, it really is their preference to move Chris Davis from left field into a semi-permanent DH role. I know they'll be the first to say, you know, Chris will still see time in left field, but they really want him getting the bulk of those DH bats. And so they, you know, they're looking for that guy that, you know, can hopefully play more left field than Chris Davis. But I think, you know, as we're seeing, everything's just kind of at a standstill right now. Everywhere. I mean, trade market, free agent, I mean, everything is just pretty quiet. And I think we know the reasons why.
Yes.
Teams holding out on one or two players before the dominoes start to fall.
Yeah.
So I think that the A's are kind of also in that camp, just kind of waiting to see, you know, what's kind of left for them, because they obviously won't be involved in those top tier guys.
Yeah. All right. So while we hold off on the player side of it, let's spotlight Matt Williams. He was just another piece added to the A's puzzle, joining the team as a third base coach. And obviously fans should be pretty familiar with his great playing career. Also, the Nationals manager for two seasons. Have you heard anyone talking about him? What's the word on the street for him coming to the team?
Yeah, I mean, I think this was a decision that was kind of in Bob Melvin's hands. And Melvin played with Matt Williams back in the 80s with the Giants. And then Melvin was also on the Diamondbacks coaching staff when Williams was finishing out his career. So they're very familiar with each other. I know that Melvin thinks extremely highly of him. This was basically his first choice. I mean, he hand-selected Matt Williams, you know, gave him some time to think about it. And, you know, I think the fact that Matt Williams, you know, agreed to do this speaks highly of Melvin, and Melvin obviously thinks highly of him. So I think it's going to be a good match, and I think it'll be interesting and fun to watch Matt Williams work with guys like Matt Chapman in the infield. But I think it's just cool, you know, seeing Matt Williams coming back to the Bay on the field. Obviously has a big place in Giants history, and I'm sure Giants fans aren't too excited about it. But, you know, if you put all that aside, you know, I think just as Bay Area sports fans, they can just appreciate, you know, him being back and being on the field in the Bay.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it just as a fan watching that as well. I'm pretty jealous. All right, Jane, you know, we're going to have to hold off because we just have to wait. We're all just waiting. We're patiently just twiddling our thumbs. So that's it for this week. Anything else that's going on in athletics land?
No, I think it just seems like across baseball, it's just so quiet right now. I was actually thinking, you know, even during the Thanksgiving weekend, there's always one or two of those teams that, you know, has to, you know, make a trade the night before Thanksgiving or even on Thanksgiving.
Of course.
And this year it was just kind of quiet, which isn't a bad thing, but you just kind of wonder when everything's going to start to happen, and hopefully it's before the winter meetings.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are coming up right around the corner. All right, Jane, thanks so much for chatting. I know the next time we talk, I think it's going to be it might be a bigger deal. So I'll look forward to that, and hopefully we'll have a little restful weekend before then.
Yes, sounds good.
All right, thanks, Jane. Jane Lee from MLB.com. She's our athletics reporter. I'm Dani Wexelman, and we will talk to you next time. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Dani Wexelman here with MLB.com Rangers reporter T.R. Sullivan. T.R., before we get going, I have to ask you, how was your Thanksgiving?
Ours was good, thank you. And yours?
It was very good. I had way too much to eat, so
okay.
It was successful. I feel like we have to start right away. We got to jump in and talk about Shohei Ohtani, because what else is anybody talking about right now in the baseball world? And you wrote an article. You gave 8 reasons why Ohtani fits on the Rangers. You listed things like prize money, winning situation, powerful ground force, and also the ability to sign Yu Darvish back with Ohtani. And I feel like this reason stood out to me the most for a lot of different reasons, but I'm wondering which one you think holds the best argument for the Rangers to sign Ohtani.
Well, Danny, I think there's two. Number one, I think they have the people and the relationships with Ohtani that might get it done. They have a very strong force in Japan of scouts who really know him, who followed him, who've known him since his high school. I think that really gives them a step up. And number two, whoever gets Ohtani, whoever signs this guy, I think they're really going to have to lay out some kind of plan for him to be a hitter. You know, there's no doubt everybody wants this guy as a pitcher. That's what everybody needs. We all know that. But I think whoever gets this guy is going to have to lay out a clear path for him to at least have a chance to swing the bat. And I think the Rangers have that with Shin-Soo Choo as their DH. And Choo does not want to be a full-time DH. He's willing to do it 2 or 3 times a week or whatever. And I think he and Ohtani, in a perfect world, if Ohtani could pull off this two-way player bit, I think the Rangers have the perfect situation that works for him. And then the third reason is they got the new ballpark coming in a couple of years.
Yeah. T.R., I'm wondering from the reporter standpoint, the writer standpoint, what you think about a guy like Ohtani coming to the Rangers. What's it like? What would it be like to cover a guy like that?
Well, Dan, that's a great question. I think that the fact that we've had Yu Darvish here for 5 years really will make it a whole lot easier for everybody, for the media, for the ball club, for Ohtani. I think everybody, I think that's another selling point that should be brought up, is the Rangers have already done this once, and for the most part, they did it pretty successfully. I think Yu Darvish had a good 5 years here. Obviously, the Tommy John surgery was a big setback, but that really doesn't play into this. I think the fact that they've done this before, we've done this before, I think that would really be a good selling point for Ohtani, as the Rangers know how to handle this type of situation. Although, of course, the Yankees do, the Red Sox do, the Dodgers do, a lot of teams do have that same experience, but the Rangers did it very well with Darvish.
All right, we're going to have to check in every week until this guy gets off the board to see where the Rangers are at in the pursuit of him. Let's move on to Doug Fister. The Rangers just signed this guy, veteran pitcher. Everyone knows who he is. But what do you like about this addition the most? Are there some tangibles, intangibles that stand out to you?
Well, this guy's been a winner in the big leagues before, Danny, and he knows how to pitch, and he's never been able to be an overpowering pitcher. He's had to do it with his pitch ability, with four pitches, knowing how to pitch, knowing how to locate, knowing how to change the speeds. They're getting him on a small base salary, $3.5 million. I mean, when you have three spots open in the rotation at least, you're not going to get the three top free agent pitchers in the game. You're going to have to take a chance on somebody at the back end of the rotation. And I think Fister's a good gamble. He's, 33, 34 years old. Like I said, he's never been overpowering, so it's not like age is going to erode his best skill.
Right.
He still knows how to pitch. And, if he could stay healthy and settle in at the back end of the rotation, this might be a good pickup for the Rangers.
Okay, I want to stay on the topic of starting rotation and spotlight Ronald Herrera, who the Rangers acquired. Just 22, he threw up pretty good numbers in Double-A Trenton. So I'm wondering, TR, can he make the starting rotation out of spring training? What's he got to prove to do that?
Well, it's interesting, Danny, because he's kind of a very similar to Doug Fister, young Doug Fister.
Mm.
Again, he's not an overpowering pitcher.
Yeah.
He's a kid who has four pitches. His fastball is a little harder, but he's about 91, 92 miles an hour. But, young kids like that, he's a small right-hander. Fister's 6'8". This kid's 5'11". Small right-handers like that, a tendency to get lost in farm systems. And we all know the Yankees have a great farm system. They have a lot of prospects coming up. And, they had to make room for some people. And Herrera had to be one of the odd men out of that whole scheme. So the Rangers felt like they could take a chance on the kid. Maybe he's a guy who can, pitch at the big league level, learn how to pitch, use all his pitches, throw strikes, change speeds. That's a tough order for a young kid.
Right.
A veteran like Doug Fister, if you look at Doug Fister's history, it took him a few years to get it figured out too. But the Rangers feel like this kid is worth a chance here. Coming into camp is one of the starting pitching candidates.
I'd be interested to see the interactions between Fister and Herrera if you are making these comparisons. I'd be interested to see if Fister took him under his wing maybe a little bit and tried to show him the ropes.
That would be a great thing. Another guy, Danny, that they have is Colby Lewis, who signed on as a special assistant. He's a guy, kind of kid, kind of like Fister, who threw 88 miles an hour with a fastball, but had the great slider and all the other intangibles. Yeah, you're right. Those are the kind of kids the kind of guys that you want around all your young kids, not just Herrera, but some of the other guys they got coming up in the farm system, too, that are getting close to the big league level.
Yeah, and eventually I feel like it pays it forward to bring on veteran presence like that. I want to talk about another guy, Juan Centeno, 28 years old. It's the fourth catcher to their 40-man rotation. What's the thought process in getting a guy like him?
Well, the Rangers have Robinson Chirinos as their number one catcher, and Brett Nicholas is the backup. He's a left-handed hitter and
Mizzou guy.
What's that?
He's a Mizzou guy.
Oh, okay. He's also a great guy, and he's worked really hard the past 3 or 4 years to become a full-time catcher. And I think he's made a lot of great strides. And I'd like to see him as the backup catcher.
Okay.
But, you always want some depth and. Danny, as well as I do, every team comes into camp with about two or three non-roster catchers,
right.
Veterans, as depth. And, you know, the Rangers are still probably going to pick up one or two more guys just like that. But, you know, this is somebody they liked. He's been on the Astros, been around a winning environment, and they felt like it was a good pickup.
All right, I like that. So the roster's at 38. Is that right, TR?
Correct.
All right, so 38. So who's going to get the other two spots?
Well, they're hoping it's going to be Ohtani and one starting pitcher to be named later.
There we go.
They're still looking at bullpen help. You know, there's some guys out there they like. I know a couple of years ago they tried to trade for Brandon Kinsler when he was with the Twins, so I'm sure he's on their radar. But they still need at least one more starting pitcher. And, you know, they can always, you know, you can drop people off the roster. They, you know, without naming names, they got some guys coming up who could easily be dropped off the roster if they were able to get the free agents they wanted, or, you know, possibly a trade could happen. Who knows?
All right, so it might be in the stars for Ohtani and Darvish. Let's talk about another star Hall of Famer, Pudge Rodriguez. So just celebrated his birthday, but he's giving back. He doesn't want any presents. He's giving back. And so we're recording this on a Tuesday. It's actually Giving Tuesday today. And he's holding an event on Wednesday the 29th. So he and his crew of all-stars are going to be building two houses, putting up the walls, and also assembling care packages for 177 Habitat for Humanity Houston families. What can you tell me about this, TR?
Yeah, Pudge Rodriguez got elected to the Hall of Fame on July 30th. I think since then he spent the last 4 months working on hurricane relief. Both, you know, and he lives in Florida where there was a hurricane. He's, you know, he's from Texas as far as a baseball player. So we had Hurricane Harvey there, and of course we had Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico that hit his home island. So this guy's been all over the place trying.
Yeah.
To drum up support for hurricane relief. I mean, for 2 weeks, he was collecting donations from across the Metroplex, Dallas-Fort Worth area, and flying them down to Puerto Rico. And this, you know, Tony Clark will be there next week, or Wednesday, and Jose Altuve will be there, and Rick Helling. And I mean, it's a pretty impressive list. I think Chris Davis was supposed to be there, and they're going to build a couple houses. They're going to have a big dinner that night to raise money for hurricane relief. I mean, you know, this is what Pudge has been doing since he got elected to do the Hall of Fame. Is he's really been just about in the middle of every hurricane relief effort.
That's great. I feel like the baseball world, it's a great way to, you know, you can look at him and see what he's doing. He's a great leader right now, a great role model and face for the game. All right, TR, my last question to you. So the Rangers put out a poll on Twitter. Did you see this poll about which Rangers moment was their favorite from 2017?
No, I did not see that.
Okay, so they, you know, they had a bunch of different moments, and obviously Beltre's 3,000th hit won by a landslide, easily. I'm wondering, when you were covering this moment, I know you talked about this earlier this year, but what was it like for you in that moment to not only watch it as just a person who I think probably appreciates and respects Adrian Beltre, but also as someone who's been covering him for a long time?
Well, that was the most amazing day in Rangers history, because you got to understand, Ivan Rodriguez was being inducted into the Hall of Fame that same day in Cooperstown, New York. And I think the 3,000th hit was an hour later in Arlington. So half of us were up in Cooperstown covering the Hall of Fame event. The other half were down in Arlington watching the 3,000 hit. And it's kind of unfortunate that some of us weren't able to see both of them because,
right.
You know, Adrian got hurt and missed the first 2 months of the season. Otherwise, we'd have had the best of both worlds. But it ended up being on the same exact day.
Wow.
And an hour apart. So we're all up there. We're all up there in Cooperstown, New York. You know, Pudge got done. And so now we're sitting around the workroom in this little gymnasium out at the Clark Sports Center in Cooperstown. I know you've been out there, and we're typing our stories, and we're watching on MLB TV waiting for Adrian Beltre to get his 3,000th hit. So it was just an incredible day. It's just an incredible day for the Rangers all around.
Yeah, one that I don't think people will forget anytime soon, if ever. All right, TR, I so appreciate your time. We have a lot to talk about coming up in the next few weeks. Winter meetings are just around the corner, so I can't wait to hear what's coming up. Maybe Ohtani and Darvish will fill those two spots, but thanks for talking with me today.
Okay, Danny, we'll see you next week.
All right. I'm Danny Wexelman. That's TR Sullivan. These are MLB.com Extras podcasts, and we'll talk to you soon. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Astros reporter Brian McTaggart for MLB.com. And Tags, before we talk baseball, we have to talk Thanksgiving. I want to know, what did you eat? How was it? How many times did you get up for seconds and thirds and fourths?
Well, it was good. I went up to my in-laws outside College Station. They live sort of a rural area, to say the least. So we kind of stuck in there for a while. But, ate some turkey. And yeah. I went to seconds right away. I was like, I'm not wasting time. I'm not letting it get cold. I went right for it. And then told myself I'd never eat again. But I think I was smacking a few hours later. So typical Thanksgiving.
That sounds perfect. I love it. The Astros are pretty quiet, I would say, from the last time we talked. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's been really quiet. I mean, they really haven't done anything. I mean, at this point last year, they had already signed Josh Reddick. They had already traded for Brian McCann. They had already signed Charlie Morton. They were just a couple of days away from signing Beltran. So, you know, a year ago, they were pretty much putting the finishing touches on their offseason heavy lifting. But they don't have as much to do this offseason, and they haven't done really anything, which, of course, you know, nothing's really happened with anybody around the league.
Yeah. Yes. So George Springer was in our office on Wednesday, and he did a little bit of a car wash here out in New York, and it was really cool to listen to him kind of reflect on some of his favorite home runs from the World Series, moments that mattered for him, and also kind of just learn a little bit about him. And I'm wondering, Brian, if you knew that George Springer could do gymnastics.
Oh yeah, I did know that. His mother was a competitive gymnast.
Yeah.
Earlier days, and yeah, he comes from a really, really athletic family. I mean, his dad played in the Little League World Series.
Yeah.
He used to be able to do backflips. I'm not sure if he can still do them or not. I need to ask him.
Yeah, we might need some video proof of that. I actually had a chance to meet his parents at the Little League World Series 2 years ago. They were getting the award for Little League Parents of the Year. So met his parents, met his sisters, and it blew my mind that the entire family is literally just an athletic monster. It was incredible.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, his sister plays softball at Ohio State. And, you know, George did gymnastics coming up and I think did pretty much every sport except football. I don't think his father would let him play football. But they're an amazing family and, you know, super nice parents. And, you know, I try to get out in the stands and talk to them any chance I get. And I know they're super invested in what George is doing and their family as a whole. I mean, they're really, really great people and, you know, nice parents for the World Series MVP.
Yeah, not too shabby, I'd say. All right, Brian, the Astros are getting paid. I had to read this number twice because I wasn't sure what number I was reading exactly. So let me make sure I got this right, that Major League Baseball announced the Astros are going to receive $30 million, is that right?
Yep.
$30 million. That's the share of the players' pool for winning the World Series. Each full share valued at a record $438,901.57, to be exact.
Yeah, pretty amazing. I mean, that's I kept reading and waiting to see if beat writers got any kind of share in that. Unfortunately, my phone hasn't rang yet.
I was going to ask you, Brian.
No, that's amazing money. I mean, for some of the guys that are making close to the minimum, like a Brad Peacock, you know, he's almost doubling his salary now for the season. So, for guys like that, that's, you know, it's a pretty substantial amount of money. A guy like Justin Verlander, you know, he told us already he's going to donate that to charity.
Right.
So, you know, no skin off his teeth there, but it's going to a good cause. But yeah, an absolute record amount, and they handed out 60 shares, so 60 people in the organization are getting that full amount.
Oh, my gosh.
438, and then some other people are getting some money as well. So Astros are pretty generous with that bonus.
Is that what we see, that the teams are giving out that amount of shares to, obviously, to the team and then to people who deserve it? Is that how it works?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't come out who gets it, but I mean, I anticipate probably any player who contributed at any point in the season gets some. I mean, you're looking at, you know, 35 to 40 players off the bat, the coaching staff, the training staff, the strength and conditioning staff. That's another 15 to 20. And then, you know, maybe the grounds crew gets a share here and there. I don't know if, you know, the GM or those guys get any, but you know, generally teams try to take care of a little of everybody. I mean, for the players, it's big, but when you're a strength and conditioning coach,
yeah,
and you get a full share, or you're on the grounds crew and they give you a cash award no matter what it is, I mean, that's a pretty life-changing amount of money. And everyone contributes when you win the World Series. I mean, it's not just the players, it's the whole organization. So I think the players try to reward everybody they can.
Yeah, that's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to Brad Peacock. You just wrote about him, did a great story. Man, he did damage during the World Series. Pitched 7 1/3, had a 2.45 ERA, and gave up just 4 hits and 2 earned runs. Where can we expect to see him slotted for the season? And, you know, how much does spring training impact that position that he's in?
Well, yeah, I mean, they can go either way with Brad. I mean, he's pitched well enough as a starter, pitched well enough in relief, and really proved it in the playoffs as well. But I think he goes into spring training. I think they'll go into spring training looking at him as a starter. I mean, look at last year. The Astros needed, 10, 11 starters. I mean, they had 5 starting pitchers on the DL at one point. So they're going to need more than 5 starters. And, you know, Brad Peacock, I think right now you would, you know, you look at the rotation, Verlander, Keuchel, McCullers, Morton, all locks, Colin McHugh, if he's healthy, he's probably in there. And then you have Peacock. And, you know, maybe he takes that 5th rotation spot. But the way he pitched in relief, he could be such a weapon in that bullpen if he's able to pitch 3-4 times a week instead of, one or two times a week. So I think it'll just a matter on – it'll depend on the health of everyone else in the rotation and how they're pitching. But I don't think there's any question he's going to be a big weapon for them and pitch some meaningful innings, whether in relief or as a starter.
Were you surprised at how well he did in the World Series? Or obviously you're covering him every day. So from your perspective, is that what you expected to see? Or were you kind of like, man, this guy really showed up?
Well, he was the big surprise of the whole season. I mean, Charlie Morton was as well, but Peacock was a guy who had been here for the previous 3 or 4 years, I guess the previous 3 years, and he'd been up and down, AAA, majors, hurt a lot, rotation, bullpen, just like, wow, he's just, you know, is he going to get it together? You know, he came to spring training, he was out of options, and I really thought that he wouldn't make it through spring training. I didn't think he would pitch well enough to make the team, and I thought they would have to put him on waivers, somebody would take him. I thought our Brad Peacock days were over, but, you know, the injury to Colin McHugh at the end of the spring sort of opened up a spot. He took it, pitched well, pitched better, moved to in relief, moved to the rotation, kept pitching well, and all of a sudden became this force. And just in the nick of time for his career, I mean, he was talking about going and playing overseas, and now here he is. He's on the, getting that World Series bonus, getting a ring, and he's going to be a big part of their plans going forward.
Yeah, he's aging well right now, I would say.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the 40-man roster. Rosters had to be announced, and the Astros added 2 guys, CNL Perez and Dean Dietz, to protect them from the Rule 5 draft. So we've got a left-hander and a right-hander there, pitchers. Why should Astros fans be excited about these 2 guys?
Well, Perez is a pretty intriguing name. I mean, he's the left-hander. He's a 20-year-old Cuban defector. Who they signed last year. The signing got a little messy because they tried to sign him and it fell through over health concerns. And then that was in September, and then they came back and signed him again in December for $2 million. And he pitched pretty well, too, when he got his career going. So he's going to be at Major League Camp. A lot of eyes on him. I mean, he hasn't pitched professionally before, you know, this year until he pitched in Cuba in 2014. So he's still a young arm, still a lot of mileage on that arm, and I'm kind of anxious to see him up close. Dietz is the right-hander. They drafted him in 2014, 11th round, sort of unheralded guy out of Northeast Oklahoma A&M College. And he was in AAA last year. I mean, he bounced between 2 levels, but he was really good at Corpus Christi, where he spent, just a brief cup of coffee. He got knocked around a little bit in Fresno, but he's a starter who they has strikeout stuff. They really like his stuff, and they're pretty deep right now in starting pitching. But when you talk about those next wave of starters that are coming up, I think you're going to look at Dean Dietz and, of course, Forrest Whitley, the number one pitching prospect.
Yeah.
Those are going to be the guys that come up when some of these older veteran guys choose to move on, whenever that is, in the next few years.
I love it. All right, last, Brian. We're going to spotlight Carlos Correa. He's bringing a little holiday cheer, some early and extra holiday cheer to Puerto Rico. Can you highlight the event that he held down there? It sounded like an incredible time. Thousands of kids got a chance to come out. And just what kind of person Carlos Correa is?
Well, he's amazing. I mean, he is so charitable, and the stuff that he does. And he's not alone. I mean, Lance McCullers, who's also 23, like Correa, has a foundation. I don't know about you, but I did not have a foundation at 23 years old.
Nope, nobody did.
But the stuff they do is amazing. Yeah, Correa last Saturday on the 25th went down to Puerto Rico for the first time since the hurricane with his fiancée, Daniela Rodriguez. And they pretty much had an all-day party for kids. They invited, I think, 1,000 kids. They had food for up to 5,000 people. They gave away all kinds of stuff. There were balloons and games and clowns and stuff like that. And that was all for Correa, just to try to help bring smiles on faces of people in his hometown. And we all know that Correa and Carlos Beltran did a lot towards the end of the season, of course, donating money and items to be sent on a plane over to Puerto Rico for hurricane relief. So it's not a surprise. And Correa, like a week after winning the World Series, was at a hospital in Houston. We talked about that before. And these guys are making the rounds. Alex Bregman a couple of days ago was surprising some kids and making their Christmas brighter. So the Astros are everywhere. I mean, George Springer is up in New York and in our studios, but when they're in Houston, they're really giving back to the community, and the Astros really have to be proud of what these guys are doing. After playing an extra month in the season, they're still giving back to the community in a big way.
I love it. I feel like they're such a great example for future generations coming up and kids who are fans of the game. When kids see this happening, I think in turn they want to do that, and it's just such a really nice thing to see. So I feel like everyone must be so proud of what they're doing, you know, accomplishing on the field, but as well off the field. It's really, really impressive to see from these guys, Brian.
Yeah, there is, and I think there's going to be more coming as we get closer to the end of the year and the holidays ramp up. And I know that there's an event coming up. Can't say too much about it that Mr. Correa will be involved in, so stay tuned on Astros.com in the next few days. It's going to be a really cool event, but can't quite talk about it yet. But he's going to be out there again, brightening some young lives. So look for that at Astros.com in the next few days.
All right. Very cool, Brian. Well, thank you for your time. I guess we have about a week and a half until winter meetings, and the madness could really get going then. But I hope that you have a little more quiet time before things pick up. I know you've had a busy season, so you deserve it.
Yeah, the winter meetings got here really fast. It's usually like my halfway point for the off season, but now it's like it happened like only a couple weeks after the season. But hey, I'll take it. It was a fun October.
There we go. They're knocking on your door. All right, Brian McTaggart. He's going to keep covering the Astros for MLB.com. I'm Danny Wexelman. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll catch you next time. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Angels reporter Maria Guardado. Maria, before we get to any baseball, I've got to know, how was your Thanksgiving? How many sides did you have? How many times did you get up for seconds and thirds and fourths?
My Thanksgiving was great. I spent it with my family in the Bay Area. And surprisingly, I actually limited myself to one helping of everything because I spent the whole day before that making, like, pies. I made three pies, pumpkin, pecan, and banoffee, which is like a British pie. So the reason I held back during the actual dinner was because I was really hyped for my pies. So,
oh, my gosh.
I went all out on the pies and kept it to one serving of the actual Thanksgiving dinner. But it was awesome. It was great.
Great. All right. That's fair enough, I guess. I'll let you slide with that. All right. Let's talk a little baseball. That's what we're here to do, I suppose. We're going to spotlight Brad Ausmus. Angels named him special assistant to the GM. What kind of impact do you think he's going to have on the Angels? Have you heard anyone talking about him or commenting on what they think he's going to be able to do for this club?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting addition. Bud Black, I guess, held a similar position about 2 years ago when he was in between managing jobs. So I think it makes sense for Ausmus to kind of, you know, come in and, you know, hold kind of a front office post as he, you know, probably takes some time off from managing after kind of being let go by the Tigers. And I think his role is, you know, going to be more about, you know, a lot of scouting, kind of player evaluation and, you know, just kind of giving his input to the front office and the coaching staff about, you know, the players and, you know, opponents. So I think that's kind of, you know, the type of impact that he'll end up having with his organization.
So I wanted to focus in on second base. You wrote about that being a priority, number one, in fact. And I'm wondering who stands out to you among the crowd of options, because there's a decent amount of options. And then after that, talking about the platoon at third, but let's focus on second base first. Is there a couple of names or one name in particular that stands out the most to you?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, obviously there are a number of ways that the Angels could definitely go about trying to fill their hole at third base. I think the players that always seem to make the most sense, just in terms of, you know, how they would be able to help the club, to me always seem to be trade candidates, like, you know, Dee Gordon of the Marlins would be a guy that I think would be a pretty good fit for the Angels, just because he could, I mean, he's a speedy guy, and Mike Socha kind of loves, you know, having that speed on the base pass, and then he could also fill the club's leadoff, be the club's leadoff hitter, and I think he's under control for a couple more seasons, so I think that he would be someone who I think would be a good fit. And obviously the Marlins have made it known that they're trying to shed payroll, and, you know, a lot of their players are available. You know, I think the only thing is, I don't know if the Angels have kind of the prospect capital needed to kind of land a talent like Dee Gordon. So, you know, that might be one of the kind of the roadblocks to acquiring a player like him. Another guy who the Angels have really been connected to a lot in the past, or at least expressed interest, is Cesar Hernandez from the Phillies. He's kind of a similar guy to Dee Gordon, that he's kind of a speedy guy who could be a presence at the top of the lineup, has been really good on base person as well, and he hasn't even hit arbitration years yet. So, you know, he's similar to Dee Gordon in that he could kind of be a long-term fit for that hole at second base. But, you know, I think the same thing that's kind of, you know, it's just like the acquisition cost might be a little too high for the team right now. So, you know, if the Angels wanted to explore some free agent options, I think the best would probably be Neil Walker, who's a switch hitter, although he kind of, his defense isn't, you know, spectacular, and the Angels have actually made quite an effort to shore up their defensive side of the game. So, I'm really curious to see what route the Angels end up taking to kind of address that hole, because it is something that has kind of eluded them the past couple of years. So I'm sure they're at work right now trying to pull something off.
And so, speaking of, we'll stay in the infield. And, well, I guess I did want to ask you, what about Ian Kinsler? Did you have any burning opinions about him slotting into that second base?
So I think one of our colleagues, John Paul Morosi, reported that the Angels have expressed interest in trading for Ian Kinsler. I think that, you know, he would make sense, but I feel like he'd be more of a stopgap than anything, because he only has 1 year left on his contract. He's 35, and he bats right-handed, and the Angels have kind of made it known that they're interested in adding more left-handed bats. So, and I think he's also coming off an off year. So, while I'm sure it would, you know, wouldn't take as much to acquire him than would have the couple of other guys I mentioned, you know, I don't think he would be an ideal fit. But, you know, I'm sure the Angels are kind of really spreading a wide net and you know, trying to get a sense of who would be the best fit for them at the price that they want. So, I mean, he's definitely another option.
Okay, awesome. So looking at third base, so you wrote about a potential platoon that the Angels are looking at with Luis Valbuena and a right-handed hitter, and I'm looking at Todd Frazier for this. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is all based off an interview that one of the assistant Angels assistant GMs, Steve Martone, did with MLB Network Radio, in which he said that he would like to see a platoon at third base between Valbuena, who bats left-handed, and a right-handed hitter. And, Todd Frazier would be a guy who could potentially fit. You know, he's a right-handed bat. You know, I'd be curious to see if Todd Frazier would be willing to kind of accept a platoon-type role, because I'm sure he's kind of used to being a full-time guy, an everyday guy. So, you know, obviously signing up to be kind of a platoon would be kind of taking a step back from that role. So he might be a little bit overqualified for that. Mm. But, you know, I think, you know, there are a number of other guys available on the free agent market who, you know, could also fill that type of role. One of them would be Yunel Escobar, who actually, you know, spent the last 2 years as the Angels starting third baseman. Although I don't know what the Angels' level of interest would be in bringing him back. He kind of missed a lot of time with injuries this past year. And I believe he's 35, so he's not exactly young. You know, it's interesting to me that the Angels, or at least, you know, based on this interview, have chosen to kind of, or appear ready to kind of take on a platoon type solution to third base rather than kind of pursue one of the one of the third basemen who are on the free agent market, like Mike Moustakas or something, someone like that. Yeah, I'm really curious to see what they do with third base and potentially first base as well.
So I wanted to focus a little bit more on this infield. I feel like there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle that the Angels are still trying to figure out, but they're also trying to find some depth in the outfield as well, backups. How do they go about this? How do you feel like they're going to prioritize? The winter meetings are coming up in a week and a half. What do you foresee coming from the Angels in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, well, I feel like the entire market has been pretty slow. I feel like there haven't really been a lot of signings yet.
Yeah.
So hopefully once the winter meetings come, things will kind of start to pick up and, you know, things will get moving a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I kind of expect the Angels to really prioritize second base. So I feel like that might be the first domino to fall for them. And, you know, I'm sure they've been having conversations with teams, you know, this whole winter. So, you know, maybe those will heat up in the coming weeks. And in terms of outfield, well, you know, they're pretty set in terms of their starters. You know, they have Justin Upton, Mike Trout, and Cole Calhoun. So, yeah, it's really kind of a matter of just adding some depth. They already kind of took a step towards that by signing Jared Hoying to a minor league deal. So, you know, Hoying has spent some time with the Rangers. So, you know, he's a guy who could, you know, potentially latch on as a fourth outfielder, although I expect the Angels to probably make a couple more signings at least. And they also added Michael Hermosillo to their 40-man roster, so he's another guy who could kind of help bolster that depth, that outfield depth, with some names already in that mix.
Yeah.
I definitely think the infield will be more of a priority come winter meetings and, you know, the rest of the offseason.
Okay, so you mentioned Michael Hermosillo. So him, along with three other gentlemen, Jaime Barria, Jesus Castillo, and Jake Jewell, added to the 40-man, shielding from next month's Rule 5 draft. So why is this important that the Angels did this for these guys, but also for the organization?
Yeah, so, you know the whole benefit, I guess, of being on the 40-man roster for these guys is that, you know, they're ineligible to be taken by another organization during the Rule 5 draft. So, yeah, I mean, Jaime Barria, I feel, is probably the biggest name in that group. He's a right-handed starter from Panama, who's probably, you know, I would say the prospect who's kind of the closest to helping the Angels on the major league level. He kind of shot from you know, high A to triple A this past year. He also pitched in the futures game. So I think he's someone who the Angels feel can kind of be part of that rotation mix. You know, if someone gets injured, he'd probably be kind of an option to come in and help the rotation. So, I think he's someone who really is going to play into, you know, the Angels' future for sure. And, you know, Michael Hermosillo, I think, is another guy who's pretty close. He also ended the season at AAA, and that's, you know, usually a good sign that, you know, a player is near the majors and
Yeah.
kind of on the verge of helping. So the other two players that you mentioned, Jesus Castillo and Jake Jewell, are also pitchers, and they ended the season in double A. So I feel like they probably will need a little bit more seasoning. But, you know, they could be someone who, you know, perhaps midsummer or so, could also be kind of pitching depth options for this organization, which I think is important just considering the fact that the last 2 years the Angels have really been burned by their kind of lack of pitching depth at the upper level of the minors. So I feel like the fact that they have these three guys kind of coming is a really good sign for the organization.
All right, Maria, we've talked about a lot, but it sounds like we have a lot more to go, and we're just waiting for all the dominoes to fall at this point. So next week we could have some crazy news, or we could just, you know, it's going to hit the fan at the winter meetings. I'm not sure which way it's going to go. But it's coming. It's all coming towards us. So I appreciate your time and your insight, and I can't wait for something big to happen. I'm really excited, and I feel like it's going to be a huge piece for the Angels going forward.
Yeah, let's hope so.
All right, Maria, thank you so much. I'm Dani Wexelman. This is Maria Guardado for MLB.com. She covers the Angels and is a rock star. You can catch that at angels.com. And Maria, we will talk to you soon. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Dani Wexelman with Mariners reporter Greg Johns, who is covering all things for us at MLB.com. And Greg, before we get to any baseball conversations, I have to know, how was your Thanksgiving? How many servings did you have? What was your favorite side dish? Tell me all the details.
Sadly, I'm still eating from Thanksgiving.
Yes, that's great.
We cooked plenty. We had the kids over, cooked more than we needed. It's still in the fridge, and I'm not opposed to leftover turkey and stuffing, and it's kind of dangerous, frankly. You know, still some pecan pie. I'm going to put pecan pie at the top of my list if you want. Just to kind of get in enough sugar to keep me rolling for through this podcast and beyond, maybe into the season. So it's all good. Thanksgiving's great. Mine was wonderful, and thanks for asking.
Can you send me any pie? I would be a fan of that.
Yeah, we certainly have some left. So yeah.
Yeah.
My son's girlfriend came over and brought three pies when we probably needed one for the group we had.
Oh my gosh.
It's all good in the pie world.
I love it. I love it. Now you're making me hungry. But I guess we'll talk about baseball now, Greg.
All right.
So I wanted to talk about Hisashi Iwakuma. And from what I can see, and you tell me if I'm wrong, it looks like the Mariners' rotation looks pretty good. It looks like they got a bunch of good guys. But Hisashi Iwakuma, he was obviously out last year with shoulder issues, became a free agent when Seattle declined his club option for 2018. But instead, they ended up giving him $1 million in a buyout. Obviously, they respect him. And if he can come back at 36, right, and win a spot, they want to give him the chance to do that. But why is this a good deal for the club and for Iwakuma?
Well, with Iwakuma, they're bringing him back on a minor league deal, and he was willing to do that because of his shoulder issues. He's questionable if he'll even be ready for the start of the season. He had shoulder surgery in late September. They finally kind of decided to go in and clean up some problems, and he missed almost all of last season.
He
pitched the first month, and then he just fought that shoulder. And he's a guy who worked so hard. He was out there trying over and over to come back, and it just never got right. And so they finally went in and cleaned that thing up. And he should. They're hoping to. He could be throwing by the start of camp. And whether he's ready for the start of the season or not is a question. So he's willing to come back. This is a guy who's been a Mariner since he came over from Japan. He's always been a Mariner. Loves Seattle, and it's home for he and his family. Feels comfortable there. And so when it was clear that he wasn't going to hit the free agent world and make Buka bucks anywhere, he said, "Hey, I want to be in Seattle. I want to rehab this thing. I want to get right." And he's a very loyal guy. He said right after the surgery that he wanted to come back and produce again. I think he felt bad that he didn't deliver last year, and he's the kind of guy that wants to get it right, and he wants to get it right here in Seattle. So, they do have a number of guys coming back. I think Zapota would still like to add another quality arm to that rotation, and I suspect that he'll be active in the free agent market whenever that free agent market finally starts heating up here. But they do have James Paxton and Felix and Mike Leake kind of top of that rotation, and Erasmo Ramirez, Ariel Miranda that pitched well for them last year, and a couple of young guys, and Marco Gonzalez and Andrew Moore that can fit in there. So they have some numbers. Iwakuma, I don't think they expect to contribute right off, but if he can get healthy and be what he's been in the past, he's been one of the better starters in the American League for 5 or 6 years. So if they can get him healthy, certainly would be a help.
Yeah. So, okay, here's my follow-up question. I have two, and of course they pertain to Shohei Ohtani. I'm wondering if this – obviously the Mariners are extending a really nice gesture to Iwakuma, but does this have anything to do with Shohei Ohtani at all?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think every move that's made in 30 clubs this year has probably got Shohei Ohtani in the back of the mind. So, I'm not going to sit here and say it has nothing to do with that, but I think really this is about Iwakuma and the loyalty he's had with the club and his history. And I think this is a no-risk minor league deal to bring him back, get healthy. So, does it help that they've got a guy like Iwakuma that's well respected in Japan and has a history with the Mariners and certainly would be I assume a welcome addition to the team if Ohtani came here? Sure, I don't think that's a non-factor, but I don't think it's the driving force.
Okay, my next question also has to do with Mr. Ohtani. So he asked the clubs. This is so interesting to me. He asked the clubs to tell him why that he should choose that specific club. And obviously, like, all along, money is great. Whoever can offer him the most is great. But I think it's becoming more clear that that's not his main focus. If it was really about the money, he would have waited, right? He wouldn't have come here early. He would have waited so he could get the maximum amount of money. So I think he really wants to feel welcome. And there are rumors swirling, you know, he wants to be the only Japanese player on the team. There are lots of different things. But what do you think the Mariners are going to write in their letter to Shohei Ohtani to convince him to come play there?
Yeah, I assume they'll ask him if he's a coffee drinker and Starbucks is, if he likes Starbucks, salmon, and the Space Needle, you got to come to Seattle, right?
Yeah. So,
it's interesting. This is a fascinating offseason with Ohtani, and the Mariners are smack in the middle of it. And if, you know, Jerry DePoto came out and flat out said, hey, this, we've been planning for this for over a year. So I think when that letter writing came, I'm pretty sure they had that plan already, and I'm 100% sure that they focus largely on the Japanese history with the Mariners,
and there's a
reason that they feel they're a good fit for Ohtani, and they've gone over to Japan and used their resources there and their connections to get to know him and get in behind some doors that maybe some other clubs haven't, and they will continue to hammer, I'm sure, on their Japanese history, which, you know, since 1998 they've had a Japanese player on the team every year, and that's a long stretch, and
definitely,
that's a group that, you know, Ichiro is as it turns out, Ohtani has said, one of his favorite players. So, you know, there you start with that history, and, you know, it's not just Ichiro. I mean, this is a club that had, you know, Kazuhiro Sasaki was the closer for in the early 2000s, and you know, the 116 win team in 2001, he was a huge part of that and their history there. You know, Iwakuma that we just talked about has been the last 6 years, you know, one of their top starters. You know, Kenji Jojima was the catcher here in the mid 2000s. You know, had a, I think 4 years he was a starting catcher, and you know, going back to Shigetoshi Hasegawa, I remember it was back in the early 2000s, was a big player. You know, recently thinking Nori Aoki, and
right.
Munenori Kawasaki, these guys. I mean, the Mariners' history is flush with Japanese connection, and all the way back to the ownership group. I mean, this is the only team in Major League history that has been owned by a Japanese group, and with the Nintendo Corporation, and from, I think, bought them in 1992, and owned them until a year ago when they sold out, and still have a minority ownership, but not the majority ownership anymore. So this is a team that's well founded, and along with that becomes you get guys like Ichiro and Iwakuma who have you know, become big parts of Seattle, and can sell this franchise to Ohtani. I would believe it's the comfort level that they had in Seattle. You know, why they like it. You know, Iwakuma has made this his home and loves it here. You know. Some guys like to be in New York. Some guys like the big city, want to be in L.A. and Hollywood. And some guys like, a city like Seattle. It's a little smaller, but still has a huge Japanese-American population and a comfortable environment. So, you know, I'm sure that they're going to hammer hard on that. And, you know, I think one of the most interesting things that DePoto has said this offseason is that he's willing and able to move Nelson Cruz into the outfield a couple of days a week if Ohtani came here, so that Ohtani could DH. I mean, that's a pretty big statement. I mean, they're talking about doing everything they can to make this a situation attractive to Ohtani, and they also went out and made a trade to build up a little more international pool money that they can use to compete for that. So they're guns a-blazing on this thing, and I would, like you, love to read the letter they put together. I'm sure it was well presented and very in-depth. It's the recruiting process, and it reminds you of college. And I mean, just the, you know, going after a guy and selling him on your team, and not just throwing a bunch of money, but selling him on what you have. And I think that's where Seattle's going to go. And you know, as well as how they've handled Japanese players in the past, you know, their familiarity with, you know, translators and getting guys in the community and making them comfortable. So I think they're a legitimate contender. But again, as you said, nobody really knows what it exactly is that Ohtani is looking for.
Yeah. It's so fascinating, and it's a full court press, and we haven't seen this where every single team feels like I got to have this guy, obviously, and now we have to kind of prove it, even if you don't have the money to do it, or you don't I can't imagine a team saying they don't need him, but, you know, for every yeah. single team to be asked to write a letter and say, why is this guy the best fit? Why should I choose you? It's a magical moment in baseball right now. And I think that wherever he lands, I hope to be able to read that letter that got sent to him one day. I hope that that letter comes out.
That would be great.
And I think we'll obviously be talking about this guy until he goes somewhere. But in the meantime, my last question for you, Mr. Johns, you've got this weekly Mariners inbox, which has some of the best questions that I see. I feel like fans always come up with really great questions. And I saw one about Kyle Lewis. He's the Mariners' number one prospect. People are interested in this guy. They want to know, you know, what's his projected path in 2018? Where do you think he's going to be? What do you see from him?
Yeah, Kyle's been an interesting case. He is definitely their number one prospect. And every time he has been on a field, they've said this guy is heads and shoulders above everybody we've got. He is clearly the guy they're counting on being a big part of their outfield future. But, you know, he blew out his knee big time, ACL and MCL, when he had a home plate collision 2 years ago, when they right as he was beginning his pro career. So really missed a full year. Last year came back toward midseason and played, fairly well in A-ball toward the end of the year and pretty well in the playoffs. So there's some optimism there. But they had him prepared to play in the Arizona Fall League. Played two games and started having some more kind of tenderness and soreness, so they pulled him out. They say he's got some tendonitis in that area. They don't think it's a structural problem again, but they're just sore from working in so hard for a year to get back on the thing and then trying to keep playing on it. So they said, hey, let's take the rest of the winter off, get that thing right, and they're really looking at next year as being his time to kind of get back to being 100% of Kyle Lewis. And this is a guy who's a five-tool guy that can do a lot of things. So, you know, the path is still down the road a ways. He's not a guy that's major league ready. They've rushed guys to the majors before without great results. I think they'll want to take their time with Kyle. I would suspect he'll move up to double A ball at some point this next year and just give him time to get his feet wet. And from there, it's how he performs. If you play well, you move up, and if you need time, you take that time. So, I think I don't suspect that we'll see him on a Mariner roster next year, but I don't rule out anything. But I would think the plan would be probably double A ball next year and then take it from there. And if he can keep those at bats and really get healthy and show what he can do, then maybe the following year you start to look at how soon he can be in the major leagues. But certainly an exciting prospect, one of a few the Mariners have, and a guy to keep an eye on.
All right. Well, Greg, it seems like we're going to have to wait a little bit longer to hear of any major moves being made. We've got the winter meetings coming up a week and a half. So we will wait with bated breath and see what the Mariners and Jerry Dipoto decide to do. But until then, my friend, I hope you have a great week. And I so appreciate all your insights and your time.
We will do it again next week. Hopefully the turkey's done by then and we can just talk baseball.
All right. Well, we'll see about that. I may still talk about the turkey, but...
Yeah, I'm all right with that, too.
Yes. All right, Greg Johns, you are our MLB.com Mariners reporter. You can catch all his stuff on Mariners.com. I'm Danny Wexelman, and we will catch you next time.